As Father mentioned, we are closing out the Christmas season. And so, of course, the liturgical color for Christmas is white. I was really hoping to see sometime Friday afternoon a dispensation from the bishop's office for those of us in the area of TCU that we could wear purple vestments today. But it didn't happen, so here we are still in white. We look at that Old Testament reading, and the people are now back in their home after years and years of exile in Babylon. The town is ruined. The temple has been destroyed. And yet the prophet looks at the people and says, "We prayed to be able to go back to our homeland, and here we are. Do not be discouraged. Do not be sad. We are going to rebuild. We are going to make Jerusalem that shining jewel on the hill, the place that everyone is going to want to come visit." He even says, "Rise up in splendor." How many of us have heard folks who have experienced some natural disaster that has destroyed a town, a village, homes, and they say, "We're going to come back better than ever"? It's exactly what the prophet is asking the people to understand, so that Jerusalem will be that spot where pilgrims want to come, where people will want to come because of good fortune, a good life. Jerusalem, the home, the seat of the Jewish people, is as if God is calling people to himself to visit there. In our second reading, the writer of the book says that he is a steward of God's grace. He has received information and is now giving it, imparting it to the people. You know, that's what stewardship is. It's the recognition of the gifts, the talents, the information, the catechesis that we have received, and then the act of giving it back. Stewardship, that whole idea of what it is to be a true disciple. I've been given a gift by God, not just because it was a nice thing to give me. Right? God gave not me, but others the gift of song. Should that person never sing? Of course not. They have a gift. That gift should be shared. And as Christians, we believe that it is our calling to share our gifts with the community, with our church, so that we can grow and develop the body of Christ. So this stewardship idea, and we're going to begin to help you develop and understand stewardship a little better. There'll be four flyers in the bulletin, one each week during the entire rest of the month, to just explore stewardship, to inform and enlighten what it is to be a true steward, what it is we are called to be from our baptism. So often Catholics get pieces and understandings about some things, but this will hopefully lay out that true path of stewardship, of what it is to give of ourselves in prayer, in service, and in generosity to the church, to give back, just as this writer of the second reading has told us. Now, our gospel message today is this story of travel. The wise men, astrologers, from an area probably around current-day Baghdad, in that area of the world, to give you an idea. And they see a phenomenon in the skies. Folks have looked at this, and there was a couple of forensic astrologers that rewound the skies. What would it have looked like in the days of Jesus? What would those men have been looking at? Now, if you are from Babylon and you looked at what we today call the constellation Arius, didn't have that name then, but they recognized that constellation of stars. They referred to Arius as the hired man. We'll hold that thought. Now, if you're a Hebrew astrologer, You're looking at Arius, same cluster of stars, but in your mind, it represents the Lamb of the world. So we've gone from hired man to Lamb of the world. In either case, a very significant astrological arrangement of stars. And when something moves in or out of that astrological sign in the sky, they thought it meant something. Well, in those days, what they saw, most likely, was Jupiter and Saturn, which at that moment in time in the sky were so close together that they appeared to be one star. And they're moving together. Now, these two stars, these two planets, Jupiter and Saturn, are moving into the constellation Arius. And what does this mean? When Jupiter goes into the constellation Arius, there's a new king in Jerusalem. This is what it meant to the people of the day. So these astronomers then are seeing this happen. There must be a new king. And if there is a new king, we want to go give him homage because Jupiter represents the deity. It represents spirituality and religion. So with this new opportunity, these men see. They recognize that something special is going to happen. Now, in their own minds, in their own lives, in their own souls, they knew that they were looking for something. How many times today do we hear people speak about looking for things, trying to find themselves? There's a void within me I'm trying to fill. And society tells us that you can do that with 100 different things, 1,000 different cable channels. We believe there's just one thing you need to fill the void, and that's God. And when we put God at the center of our lives, when we look to God for purpose and meaning, when we are able to have hope in the future, trust that good things will happen to us. And what I mean here is the kingdom. No matter how challenging life can be, we know that the kingdom is at the end of our journey. And therefore, we can have hope in whatever trials and tribulations we are experiencing. We can work through. We can live through. Because we know at the end, the eternity that we long for is waiting for us. So they had this need, the astronomers did. And they trusted their instincts that something good was going to happen and that they had something to give. Now, this is true of each and every one of us. When we see a need, we need to trust our instincts. When we recognized the Eucharist in the tabernacle, and as we approach the tabernacle, and for those that we might know who have been away from the church for a very long time, when they approach the tabernacle, we can have that understanding that Jesus has been waiting for them for 2,000 years, waiting for them to approach, waiting for them to recognize the need to believe, the need for that void inside of us to be filled. Now, sometimes in order to fill something up, we have to empty it. Take a glass full of water. You can't put any more water in it. You have to empty some out if you want to put ice in it. Sometimes we have to get rid of some of the temporal things, some of the things that are holding us back from experiencing true joy, this joy that we are called to experience in this Christmas season. We speak of joy and peace and comfort that the Redeemer brings us. Can we hold on to this? Can it not just be 12 days of experience of joy and peace, but rather with the church helping us to understand what this means, that we can indeed let it permeate our entire lives. The Magi knew they had something to give, and so they brought their gifts. In our first reading, it reminded us that Jerusalem would be the place where people brought gifts to, because it was the shining light on the hill. It was the place of spirituality. It was the place of the Lord. And now with these wise men coming this way, and where did they go when they followed this star? Of course, they went to see the king, Herod. Herod's a difficult man. Herod was a very insecure individual. Herod did not want his reign to be threatened by anyone or anything. Now, I might shake a little bit of your understanding here, but it's good to understand. Herod, the ruler, died in 4 BC. You with me? If Jesus was born at zero, Herod's already dead. This story makes no sense. How do we explain that? Well, Gregorius was a pope that rearranged the calendar. Our calendar today is the Gregorian calendar, later adapted in the Julian calendar, right? So when Gregory was working out all the numbers, I like to think simply that he forgot to carry the one at some point and was off a little bit in his timing. So it's very likely that the astronomers came to see Herod at sometime between 4 and 6 BC. Now, what I found interesting about that was I came into that revelation in about 1998. I was taking a Bible study class at the parish, and the individual was giving the class, demonstrated all this to us. And it was like, so all of you who are so worried about the year 2000, it already happened. Happened 4 years ago. So you don't need to go home and change your calendars and start telling everybody that it's not 2023, it's 2027, because it will only cause more chaos. We're just stuck with what we have. But Herod is so jealous that he wants to find out where this king is and have the astronomers come visit. Now, it took some time for the astronomers to get there. I mean, just in the last 3 weeks, we have seen the difficulty of travel here in the United States. One airline had significant troubles, and one might say, how long does it take to get from Dallas to New York? 3.5 hours. Well, unless there are flight delays, unless there's a snowstorm, unless there are ground troubles on the airport. Now, I want you to think for a second, how long would it take you to get from where the astronomers are coming from, and we'll just use Baghdad as the example, to make a 700-mile trek to Jerusalem? Oh, and you're walking. So this thought that Jesus is born and 12 days later they show up is impractical. They saw the signs. They had to watch the star move. The star continued to move through the constellations during their travels. Their travels took a lot of time. And not only is it getting three guys packed up and ready to go, but you need camels and horses and provisions and everything you need. It was a caravan that made its way. It could have taken 8, 10, 12 months to make this journey. So the Magi that you just put in your manger scene, they left about a year and a half ago to get there for this Christmas. And this is why we see in Matthew's gospel, where did the Magi go? Into the house, not the stable. St. Francis does a marvelous job for us of helping us imagine the nativity. And he compresses time a little bit, so the Magi are there during what would have been the time that Mary and Joseph had arrived in Bethlehem for the census, and there was no room at them in the inn, so they had to stay in a stable. All good. But then as soon as the crowds cleared, Joseph likely found them a home to live in. And this is why the Magi, this is why the evangelist tells us that they went to the home. Hopefully this does not rock your faith too much. And yes, the creche is a wonderful, absolutely terrific symbol. And again, where did the Magi go? The Magi went to Bethlehem. And let's make sure that we understand what Bethlehem is. Bethlehem is the Jewish word. And it's not so much Bethlehem as Bethlehem. And Bethlehem means home or house. Lahem means bread. In what town was Jesus born? In the town of the house of bread. Let me give you two quick scripture references from John's gospel. Jesus said, I am the bread of life. Jesus said, I am the manna that came down from heaven. Food. Bread. So Jesus is born in a town called the House of Bread. And where does Scripture tell us that Jesus was laid? What was Jesus' first crib or cradle? It was a manger. And what is a manger? A feeding trough. From the very beginning of his life, Jesus was demonstrating to us that he is the bread of life. He, at his birth, is placed in a bread basket in the house of bread. And then he comes to us in this simple form of bread that we can taste, that is palatable for us, but is really, truly, actually his body, blood, soul, and divinity. How do our Protestant brothers not get this? He came from the house of bread. He was put in a bread basket at his birth. God made man in the most simple and the most humble of places. Not some man that wants to rise to the heights to say, look at me, I am God. But rather God that comes in the form of this human, very humble, needing everything because he's an infant, demonstrating to us through his entire life how we are called to live. And how is that very similar to the way the Magi came to understand? Recognize the need, that need that you have for God in your life, for Christ to be the center of your life, your purpose for living, your purpose for being should be Jesus Christ. Trust your instincts. You know right from wrong. You know good from bad. And like the Magi, give what you have. Be the person God has called you to be. Exercise your gifts and talents for the good of the community, the good of the town, the good of this parish, that we might grow and thrive in our understanding and love of the Lord. That's what we're called to do. That's who we are. That is what stewardship is all about, being a great disciple. Now, this is the Feast of Epiphany, and so, like the three wise men bring their gifts, the parish has some gifts for you. Now, as much as I would like to be able to say, and you get a car, and you get a car, and you get a car, not quite. But we have for you on the Feast of Epiphany, there has been an ancient tradition in the church, very alive in Europe, and it's a house blessing that we do on the Feast of Epiphany. There is blessed chalk in a basket in the narthex. in the bulletin, there is a blessing for your house. The leader of the house reads the blessing, and on the lintel of the front door, you're going to make the symbols that are required. The first initial of the three wise men, C, B, M. The four numbers of the calendar year, 2023, and then some crosses. There's a word, a phrase that's said for each of those actions. It's a very simple little blessing, but it's also a reminder to us of the Passover, where the Israelites, in order that the angel of death might not visit them, had the blood from the lamb above their doorstep, above the door on the lintel. We're going to not put blood there, but a little bit of chalk in that reminder that our house is blessed. Our house is a house of God, where God dwells and lives in the domestic church. So the chalk is yours. One piece is all you need per family. It was blessed last night at Mass, so this is not for the kids to be using on the sidewalk or on that little chalkboard in the house. You might wrap it up, put it somewhere safe for next year, or if you don't like keeping things around, dig a little hole in the backyard and bury it. That's what we do with items that are blessed. Okay, let it return to the ground. So chalk is back there available for you. There are also lots of poinsettias, gift number two. Poinsettias are on this side of the narthex. If you'd like a poinsettia to bring home, there's one for you to take. Again, we just ask one per family. And then the third item is, for those of you that brought in an ornament to decorate our Christmas tree, we invite you to take an ornament home. Not yours, but one from another family. The family name is written on the ornament, and we ask you to pray for that family for the whole year. Again, that one aspect of stewardship, of prayer. Whether it's a daily or a weekly prayer for that family, it's a gift you can give. Whether it's a moment of prayer or an entire rosary, the choice is completely yours. So like the wise men, there are those three gifts. There's some chalk, there are poinsettias, and there are the ornaments. But wait, there's more. There's also some calendars left over, so if you don't yet have a calendar to hang on the wall, there are parish calendars available for you as well on the narthex. So as we close out this Christmas season, let us be ever mindful of the gifts that the Magi brought to the Lord. That longing, that desire, that trusting of instincts. And let us look to this time of Christmas the church gives us to recognize the peace, the joy, the comfort that the Lord brings us, and let it last through the entire year.